The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
I have a full 40-something minutes or so, close to 50, well, 40-something minutes with Andisa inside this edition of Justice, giving you the opportunity to reach out to us and really put your questions out there. We'll do our best to answer it, all right? I want to start off the first question this morning. All right, let me get the caller the first question and then I will ask one. Hello, good morning.
A pleasant good morning, Davy. A pleasant good morning, Learned Council. A pleasant good morning, Trinidad and Tobago. So I am back after 2 weeks on vacation. But, Davy, I enjoyed it quite a bit. Anyway, Davy, I have been hearing a lot of talk about Tunapuna Regional Corporation.
We
were not consulted and so on with regard to the building of that police post. But as far as I am aware, and I will want to get councillors comment on this. The lands are owned by the Commission of State Lands, not by the Regional Corporation. So whereas I have no problem with communication, I don't think that they have the authority to stop any project. I have been hearing a lot of things, but okay, I would wait for council to comment on it.
All right.
Yeah.
So the other issue I want to touch on, Davy.
Quickly.
This is a fairly new government in place, right? They're fairly new. They have new projects and so on, so I call it new. And there will always be teething problems. But the country is in a better place than it was because there have been a lot of progress that have taken place, and people in this country are aware of it, and people abroad are aware of it. And as a matter of fact, some of the comments, I wouldn't want to tell you everything about comments that people in Miami were saying, but they were saying, people in this country should give the lady a chance. She has started on a good footing. Everything can't be perfect, but the fact is that in due course, this country is improving step by step. And these 30 police posts that are about to be built, it means that it's bringing security closer to the people. What else do we want in this short space of time to fight crime? And finally, as I leave, for those who talk about the national security boats, the Coast Guard boats and so on, Davy, if you park up your car for 10 years, or almost 10 years, it's obvious it will need repairs when it has to go back out on the road. So these boats have to get some repairs because it was parked up and a lot of things may be seized up and so on. And that is common sense.
All right.
Thank you, enjoy.
All right. So Regional Corporation.
Yeah, so in relation to the regional corporations, because I did work for a regional corporation at a point in time, and what occurs is that they are vesting orders that would vest particular places to that regional corporation. So say, for instance, there are certain recreation grounds within the area that falls within the jurisdiction of that particular regional corporation or borough corporation. There's a vesting order that vests that in the corporation, so including the roads that falls under the remit of that corporation or borough corporation, there's a vesting order vesting it in that entity. The thing is that those vesting orders weren't updated for quite some time, so it is to look to see whether this does in fact fall under the remit, but it doesn't. Well, I don't want to say it doesn't belong to the Commission of State Land, but there are vesting orders, and I believe the Eddie Hart Stadium is one of them that would be vested in the Tunapuna Piako Regional Corporation. So that's kind of how it works.
All right, cool. What is bail with surety?
Right. So let's talk about bail generally. We talk about bail a few times on the program, so you kind of have an idea of what it is. If someone is charged for an offense, they will go before the master or the magistrate, and they will consider bail, because at that point in time the person is still presumed to be innocent. They haven't been found guilty of anything, so the court will consider whether they will release someone on bail pending the determination of their matter. If the person is granted, there are several types of bail that the person can be granted. They could be granted bail with a surety, and that surety could be a named surety or just a general surety. If it is a named surety, it is a person. So person X is charged with a crime. I would say that I take the responsibility as the named surety to ensure that this person comes to court every single day. And if the person doesn't appear, then this person would have, there will be a show cause hearing where they would have to come and explain why they didn't do the obligations that they promised to do, which is bring the person to court. Or it could just be a general surety. They could grant the person bail with a surety in the amount of $750,000. That doesn't mean that the person has to find $750,000 to pay. It just means that if they don't come to court, then that will kick in. So essentially what usually occurs in those situations is that they will possibly put up a property that covers that amount. So if the surety that they are granted is $750,000, they would then have a property that is valued more than $750,000, which is used to process and access the bail. And if the person doesn't appear, only then they will have another show cause and to determine whether they should pull, because it would be like, it's kind of like a default. Like if you don't come, then this kicks in essentially.
But if I sign with a surety, I sign for X and say, okay, I will sign and he will come to court.
As a named surety.
Yeah. When that person failed to show up, I go before the courts. I had to go before the courts to answer why.
Yeah.
Because I say, I sure I know where they will be, they will come. Mm-hmm. If I am unable to answer why, because they dock me and all.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Well, then obviously that is the whole reason, right, why they are having a hearing at that point, for you to explain. So then you would be able to go and you could, and you would have to explain, well, on this day I went by his house and I was calling him and he didn't answer, and then on this day I tried calling and I have all the phone calls where I tried to call him over and over and over again. So I tried to ensure that he comes to court, but I wasn't able to. But if it's a situation where you just didn't care, and you had, you know, like you just signed because you wanted your friend to come out or whatever.
And no supporting evidence, right, or nothing.
So the whole point of having the hearing, so it isn't an automatic thing that you would repercussions. But they will give you an opportunity to explain.
And if after I do that, let's take twofold, right? I know I promised all your questions there, but I need to clear this up because I need understanding. If at the end of the day, I am unsuccessful at proving that I made attempts to get this person to court several times, let's say about over three times that the court case came up, I didn't even show up neither to see if they come to court or not. Mm-hmm. A police just show up at me and tell me you had to go to court. I went to court and I didn't even know.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to me then if I cannot successfully prove to the court that I made attempts?
So there would usually be a default. So then a consequence will be imposed on you. You'd be penalized for not, because you told the court you went.
I would make
Because
sure.
usually what
they
a
can't
case,
charge
right?
me for his crime.
No, you're not going to be charged for his crime. You're crime, well, it's not really a crime, but your offense would be not ensuring that the person appearing.
So what redress can the court seek from me,
mm-hmm.
as I did not do my due diligence?
Mm-hmm. They could penalize it, like make you pay an amount or something like that.
And if
because what occurs, right? Mm-hmm. So say for instance, if I know that I have a bail hearing coming up and the person wants to put forward a named surety, because so you can't just be a named surety, that's one thing. You have to have some type of property or something of value in your name so that the court could see that if you don't follow your obligations, there's something that they could use to penalize you. So if I know that this person has a bail hearing coming up because the person is being held at whatever police station and they said that they want their mother to be the named surety, whatever the case may be, I do up a statutory declaration saying, okay, this is the person's name, they have their property, and this property could be used in default. So because essentially if the person, you know, the person get the bail, you are indicated as the named surety, and you do not ensure that the person comes to court, the court will then have a show cause hearing where you would have to appear and explain that you tried to take steps to ensure, you know, explain.
If
you can't, then obviously they could possibly make you pay a certain amount, because usually there's a default to do whatever, then this would occur. So that will step in, that will kick in at that point in time.
All right. Okay, so here's today's Cyber Insight brought to you by 800 Tech. Your alarm system looks reassuring, but have you ever tested whether anyone responds when it goes off? Cybersecurity deserves the same level of confidence. So in other words, you have this cyber alarm lock or this alarm system in place, but if you never test it, how do you know if it's working one and if anybody responds? So that insight tip is the cyber tip this morning simply means those alarms don't function by themselves without a support system in place. And that support system, well, today's Cyber Insight brought to you by 800 Tech. Justice continues after this.
Every business leader asks the same question. Are we really secure? The truth is, you won't find the answer in assumptions. You'll find it in testing. Penetration testing safely simulates real-world cyber attacks to uncover the weaknesses attackers are looking for before they find them. At 800 Tech, we help organizations replace uncertainty with confidence through independent security, testing, and actionable insight. Because confidence comes from testing, not guessing. Call 223-TECH. That's 223-8324. Or visit www.800-tech.com to schedule a confidential consultation now.
This is 106.5.
Eastgate Mall. Are you ready? The Spellbound Caravan is rolling in with an afternoon packed with action, excitement, and family fun. Round up the crew, tackle the Hive of Five challenge, race against the clock, and prove you've got what it takes to come out on top. The excitement continues with interactive experiences by the Ministry of Planning, Economic Affairs, and Development. Meet your favorite Spellbound host. Strike a pose at our photo stations. Then score fantastic prizes and giveaways from our sponsors. Catch all the action on Saturday, August 8th, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Eastgate Mall. See you there.
Cricket fans, get ready for the biggest party in sport. The Trinbago Knight Riders are back in action in the 2026 Republic Bank CPL T20. CNC3 is bringing you every TKR match live. Feel the excitement.
That is the biggest six of the day.
Hear the roar of the crowd. And watch every six, every wicket, and every game-changing moment. Watch all Trinbago Knight Riders matches along with the Eliminator Qualifiers and the final matches live on CNC3 Television and CNC3Live.com. Check out CNC3 social media for all match schedules. Support your Trinbago Knight Riders in the battle for CPL glory.
When TKR hit the six, when TKR take the wicket.
You can also enjoy the Republic Bank CPL T20 Premier League matches via a secondary broadcast the next day at 1 p.m. only on CNC3. Cricket lives here.
Listen and stream the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
Welcome back to Freedom 106.5 FM. Let's take your calls this morning as we get into the interactive conversations on justice. Hello, good morning.
Yes, David, me again. The vesting order that Council spoke about, the corporation has the power to manage, not to own. But anyway, that's not the issue I'll call back for. I just want to add to the conversation with regard to bail. And Council, you know that there are a lot of corruption in the bail system in this country. Plenty, and I don't know how we're going to solve that. But the previous government was considering, because it came out into the open, licensing bondsmen. Mm. But it did not happen. Now, I don't see that working in this country because of several reasons. Now, Davey, you may not be aware, and Council is very much aware. When someone takes bail, the surety, listen, if you use a property, it means it's just like a mortgage. You're putting up this property in the event that this person does not come to court and I cannot produce this person to come to court and I took a responsibility to bring this person to court. This property can be confiscated and sold by the state. Mm-hmm. But that is in a worst-case scenario. What we notice is that people are taking bail for people using the same deed over and over and over, and they're doing it, and that is a dangerous thing.
Yeah,
now, it can happen because just like you could have a first mortgage, second mortgage, and so on. But that does not happen in this country. The way in which it's done, I see it all the time, and it's something that needs to be fixed. How and how much years it's going to take to be fixed is another question.
Well, all right. Thank you very much. But I agree with you. I mean, that was just discussed, you know, about it. The courts, it's the judiciary responsibility to do due diligence. One texter is saying, morning, Davey, question to the attorney. If you list a property with an agent, can you sell private without a penalty? If you list a property, so you went to an agency, a real estate agency, and you give them the particulars of the property. They come and they survey it, they assess it to be this price, and they say they will sell it. Mm-hmm. Now, once the real estate agent sells the property, they have the commission. But if while they're looking for a suitor, you come and you get a seal and you sell it.
I think that is separate from whatever arrangement that you had with the agent, because the agent didn't bring that person for you to buy, for that person to buy. So I think that would be completely separate if you got the person. Because some persons have several agents looking to sell. Because, you know, when you're going to TikTok, sometimes you'll see the same property being sold by several real estate agents, and whoever get the sale, they will get the commission. So if they didn't get that person to purchase the property, I don't think that
so there's nothing illegal
to anything.
So there's no legalities if
only if it might possibly be based on the agreement. If the agreement that you have and that agent have is that only that, you know, is like an exclusive thing that only that person would be able to find a buyer, then that might be different. But I know.
But if I have an exclusive thing, I say Andisa West Agencies only, and that's putting it in the hands of no other agency. So you alone marketing this property. But then somebody contact me, you know, my friends, and say, hey, somebody want to buy it. Am I obligated to put that person onto the agency to get it sold? Or can I just say, where's the deal? Let me go and deal with it, go to the bank, I get a transaction.
On the face of it, I don't think so, but this is a general advice. It could possibly depend on the particular agreement that you have,
With the agency. All right, so to answer that text, that caller, it depends on your contractual arrangement with the agency. So if your contractual arrangement is, listen, add this to sell, if you get it sell, I'll give you this. If you get it sell.
Yeah, because usually persons have several agents selling the same property.
The same, somebody will buy it. But is it that the other agencies, if they sell, they get less or...
No, well, whoever sell it, because you just want your property sold.
Yeah, so whoever get the sale for me, you ought to solicit your clientele. Yeah. All right. Hello, good morning.
Morning to you, Davey. And morning to your guest. County Central, ease them up a little bit now. You're going to leave and come back with the same rhetoric, but 16 months in office and now start. Come now, man. But I want to engage the attorney this morning in relation to what is a ghost. A whole group of people will have gone unemployed because allegedly they are ghosts. What is your description of a ghost? And how do you outline that being not so much the act being dishonest, but it's breaking the law? Could you outline that? Because my belief is if you're not coming to work and getting paid for it, you're not a ghost. It's just gross dishonesty. Tell me what is a ghost as a criminal act.
All right, thank you.
That sounds like a very, very specific thing. It's a very, very specific.
But, all right, to rephrase, you're talking about CPAP and you're happy, right? So let's address the white elephant in the room based on what Rowley Jr. just itemized. So a person is a contractor and he have 30 people in his purview or her purview that they legally operating, that is the contract. Yeah, there are 30 workers because we're giving you certain zones, 10 per gang.
Right.
And you have gangs that only have 6 people each. So that's 4 trees, 12 persons that just name their money's being paid to the name in an account, but no work being done by that person. Is there something illegal committed there, or just, as the caller said, gross dishonesty?
I don't necessarily want to comment on this URP.
No, you're not commenting on the URP. You're just commenting on a situation where a person did not perform duties but is being paid, but a contractor their names are being submitted by a contractor for payment that they did not perform. Is there any?
Because the way that URP and CPAP was set up is that you get paid per day, I believe. So
daily
if
paid.
You so if you didn't work for that day and you're still receiving a salary, I think that there's an issue there. But with this general URP CPAP situation, I think that we can't necessarily broad brush the entire program and say that the entire program was a ghost.
No,
because
he didn't
there
say
are persons who worked every day and who now don't have a job and who's now unemployed. So we also need to be very careful with trying to broad brush the entire. There was corruption within the program, I believe, that could have been dealt with and fixed, because there were persons who receiving a salary and they won't work in, which is an issue in itself, especially if your arrangement is being paid daily.
So that
would be my response to that.
All right. Good morning. Hello, good morning.
Hi, Mr. Murray.
Bataria, your question.
Good morning, ma'am. My question, you see, a former attorney tried to tell the present sitting attorney that she knows where there is corruption, and she knows. And if he knows, she knows, then he had to know too. So then he should go and report the corruption. So let me move on. Intelligent people, eh? So, ma'am, but the question is about bail. Well, he outlined it. You could, the possibility exists, but it's very rare that you could put up your house or property. And people use several means. And as he outlined as an attorney, because he find there is an issue with that.
Please don't stick too long.
Because you see, you have to differentiate the garbage that has come to try to throw on people.
Well, then let me do it in the last hour then, if you want to differentiate that. Because we have persons that have questions that want to ask, and you're going on with a dissertation.
All right. So, well, you see, I was getting to that.
Well, of course, get it.
I was asking the question whether or not we should have gone along with a bail bond issue to avoid one man coming in court with several.
Okay, we get that. What's the question?
The question, does she think it's a very good idea, or should we stay as we are?
Okay.
So the thing is, when I started, when I was doing internship, actually, I did my internship at a magistrate court. And at this point in time, I was still LLB level, and I saw how the process works with the bail, where at that point in time, I don't know if it's the same, at that point in time they will call all the courts and then they'll go through a book, and it was literally a book that was so tattered, and to see, you know, if that deed was checked before. And sometimes, you know, the staff rushing, so like they're not necessarily doing a good check. So I do recognize there is this issue with where persons, I'm not certain if this is the exact same process that happens now, because there has been some changes to the procedure. But there is, in fact, a need, I guess, to fix that area.
All right.
And when it concerns, you know, persons using the same deed over and over to be able to access the bail for different persons. Because the whole point of it is to ensure that this person feels as though that they would have some repercussion to them if they do not appear in court. But if they feel as though nothing will happen to them because it's just, you know, a deed that was used a million and one times, then, you know, that's an issue in itself.
Agreed.
Good morning, Davey. I live in Brooklyn, New York. I bought a house over like 12 years now. And when you do sign up with an agent, that is, if you go on the outside and you get another buyer, that agent has to get money from that. Like one thing, out in New York, it is, you sign up with an agent, whoever it is, yes, that agent have to get part of it. You can have 2 or 3 agents. That is the law out here in New York. Once you sign up with an agent, if you're going freelance, yes, but once you sign up, you can have 2 or 3 agents.
All right, well, that she did mention, according to the arrangement you have. So if that's a law in New York, well, let's hear Rima Banker.
Well, what happens with most agencies is exactly what Anissa said. You sell it by on your own, it's separate. But some agencies let you sign a contract when you go on. And what that means is you're on your own without them being the persons to find the buyer for you. You may have to pay them at least a nominal fee to cover the cost of them advertising the property or listing it on their sites. But yeah, if you get your own sale as you, the agent, what you're supposed to pay the commission for is for them sourcing a buyer for you and bringing a sale. So if they are not the one sourcing the buyer and bringing the sale, then they are not entitled to a commission. But like I said, there may be a nominal fee that you pay just for them to list it on their sites and advertise on your behalf.
Again, subjected to the arrangement you have with the said real estate agency. Hello, good morning.
If you buy your guest. So you've been charged for an offense. Right, babe? You've been charged for an offense. Your first bill, everything, key start, start, okay, and you come in and win your case. It was on $10,000 deal. Do you get back your $10,000? Because your case is not...
All right, I get it. We get the question. Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, so if it is cash bail, you can get your money back. So at the end of the matter, what usually happens, what we usually do, we would apply for the extract to show that the case was determined one way or the other, and then you would make an application to whichever court that granted you bail at that point in time to for your money to be returned. And I believe you receive interest because it's placed in something and you receive whatever interest for however long the matter was going on as well.
So if you're found guilty,
The whole point of bail, right, is to ensure that you came to court. You had no issues, there was no show cause for them to pull that or anything like that. So you had no issues.
Okay.
You could get your money back.
The bail is refunded.
Remember, at the point in time when you receive bail, because a lot of times I see when persons, I'm certain based on the headline, because there's a headline where, you know, the person who was the worker in the MP constituency office, he received $750,000 bail. And I'm certain the comments will be like, we give this person bail. But at this point in time, this person is still presumed innocent. And the bail is just, okay, I don't think that there's an issue with this person coming to court. If I have, you know, to mitigate any issues that may arise, I might ensure that this person goes to the whatever police station and sign so that the police could still find this person in case anything happened. Regardless of what this person is coming to the police station, every Saturday to sign. So the police is aware that he's around. We might take away his passport. We might, you know, certain things to ensure that this person isn't a flight risk. Well, it doesn't leave the country and try to avoid coming to court to face the consequences of their action. But the bail at that point is just to ensure that we allowing you to go back on the condition that you have to attend court until the determination of your matter. And if there's no issue, then at the end of it, you can get your money back.
All right. What about if you're supposed to sign every Tuesday?
Right.
But on that particular Tuesday, you were sick. You're home. You're not, you know, sometimes you flew higher down. And you go 2 days later.
Well, you have to sign on every day. And what usually happens, some magistrates, well, some judicial officers, more than others, they would ask, has your client been following? Because that's a condition of your bail.
No, but what I'm saying,
if you realize that on that particular day, you didn't sign for whatever reason, and then you're going to... You give an explanation. Okay, I didn't go on this day because I was sick. I could produce the medicals.
Well, what medical do you have for the common cold?
Well, you have to ensure if you know you have a condition to go by a doctor and get something. Do you don't leave that up to chance, because you don't want to go before a judicial officer who's saying, okay, so you just think you could do whatever you want. So like, even if, you know, you have the requirement that you have to come to court every single day on that particular day.
Not every single day, but every single week.
Every single court hearing. Every month. It would be whatever time that
you had to come.
You have to come to court. On that particular day, you were sick, whatever you have. Please go to the health center and get something so that your attorney or somebody could show the court that this person was sick on this particular day, which is why they didn't appear. Because at the end of the day, that is a condition of your bail. And if you breach any of the conditions of your bail, you can have your bail revoked.
Good morning. All right, Tone, hello?
Good morning, Davy.
Good morning.
And good morning, Congress. Davy, for me time the program start, and you said open forum, I am calling. And each caller getting in, Caroni Central coming twice, Barataria coming twice, and I now getting Davy. But anyhow, enough of that. Council, I would like to know that if it is a deed of gift is passed on to me, and they say to me and my grandchildren with their name on it, do I still have to have a trust set up for whenever I pass on? Thank you very much.
A deed of gift.
I believe that the person left the property for her and her grandchildren. That's a very particular situation, but the reason why you would set up a trust in some circumstances is based on the age of the children.
Okay.
So if the children, the grandchildren, are under the age of 18, it might be a situation where you set up the trust in that way, so that when they come of age, then, you know, they'd be able to get that particular property. But that's a very specific... So just to give a general disclaimer as well, the information that I give here is because I recognize that persons should have access to legal information to know how certain things work.
Mm.
But at the same time, the way how the law is set up, the law is very fact specific. So in very specific situations, we might need to have a better conversation. I need to see what is the deed of gift saying, whatever the situation is, so that I would be able to better give you legal advice on that. Because I could give you general advice that doesn't really fit neatly into what your particular situation is.
And that is why we said that very early in the onset of the program this morning, that the justice is geared towards, as Andisa says, the right to give you some kind of legal advice. But remember, every case is specific,
yes,
and tailored to differences. You must seek legal redress or legal counsel following the show. So you bring a specific case. Every case might sound similar, but the circumstances differ.
Because to be quite honest, I wouldn't say this a peeve, but one of the biggest thing that you'd have to deal with is sometimes when a client come to you and they, they probably went online and they searched something, or they hear somebody deal with something similar and they assume that it should also be the situation
for them.
You know, or they went on ChatGPT. And the thing about it, ChatGPT, you have to be very careful, because a lot of times they don't have a good grasp of our legal system in Trinidad and Tobago, the Caribbean legal system. So you have to be very careful with the information that you are receiving out there. If you receive information online and it's geared towards the US system, the US have a very, like, some things are similar because the basis or the background of the US system is common law, but the US had very intentional changes. So when they received their independence, for instance, the fact that they drive on a different side of the road is because they intentionally changed that. So they have intentional changes within their system that wouldn't apply here. So whereas you might get general legal advice, I always advise persons that you have them, which is why you go. Some persons say they go and they pay the attorney how much ever is their consultation fee just to talk to them. Is because you have to explain what your situation is for us to have a good grasp of what the problem is that you're facing, to be able to tailor our legal advice to the situation that you are experiencing. So I just wanted to put that general disclaimer out there.
Abandonment. Texter wanted to find out about abandonment. So we know if you abandon a child, there's a legal charge for that. You can be charged with child endangerment, child abandonment, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
What if this person, they got shot, so they became disabled, unable to walk, they're not mobilized, they could barely move their hands, all right, they're bedridden more or less. But you know what, they're in the care of you, the parent, the mother, single parent. You have your son or your daughter.
So who is disabled? Not the mother or the child?
The child.
The child, okay.
Which is 24, well, I should say in the 30s. You have a disabled child that got shot earlier, about a few years back, and now they're disabled.
Right.
You take them to the hospital because they had to go to the hospital for treatment ever so often, change the catheter, what have you. But then the hospital starts calling you because they take care of what, sepsis or whatever was going on with the patient, and you had to come back for your child, for the patient. This is an adult. So they're ringing down the mother phone or the father to come and pick up this person from the hospital. And the person just decided they're not coming back for him and just leave them there. Is there a legal charge that police can now come to the house and say, you as this man's mother, not child, a man, because they're a grown person or woman. This is an adult well into the 30s, almost 40, over 40, and say that you have to pick them up? Is there a charge for that?
I am not certain on the top of my head if there's a charge for it, but I know when you enter the hospital, obviously you will sign all the different papers and you would have someone listed as your next of kin. So the reason why you're calling the mother, because more than likely the mother is listed as the next of kin, and in certain medical situations, persons are given the authority to make decisions on your behalf. So, like, you know, like in situations where somebody is going to do a risky surgery, it would have this person who that person designates to make decisions on their behalf.
Okay. But if you don't go back for the person, so the hospital calls and say, listen, come and take they're ready for the discharge. But you never show up for the person.
I'd have to look into that. I actually know someone who I could talk to who is very familiar with how the RHAs work, and I will come back with an answer on that next, because I actually never dealt with a situation like that where a family member decided that I'm not going back in the hospital.
Yeah, I felt about that. No, you stay there.
And the person wasn't married or anything.
No.
So the only next of kin really and truly is
mommy.
The mother.
And mommy decides she leaving him there.
But the thing about it is that
and he
also,
is 40-something.
That also reveals how difficult it is for family members to take care of persons who are in those situations. And we don't necessarily have a lot of support for them because the state doesn't even have any home or anything to place these individuals while they... I mean, I know that there are the geriatric nurses who go to the homes and assist elderly persons and things like that, but... That would be a big responsibility on mommy. So I understand how she feels, and she probably don't have the financial, emotional, no type of support whatsoever to get all those things done.
So it's not, we won't
but
find
But we will look fine we'll if there's a charge. But why would you want to charge mommy what, in that
no,
situation?
It's not a matter why. It's what you're charging mommy with.
No,
this
but,
is a 47-year-old man in
right.
a hospital or a 47-year-old woman.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yes, it's her daughter or son, but they're in the hospital. They've been suffering, ailing for some years going through this because they have been rendered, you know, unable.
Yeah.
And look, you see me, you stay there. The state take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm coming back. And the person collects disability.
Mm-hmm. And who collects the disability?
Well,
on their behalf?
Yeah, well, it could be the parent, daddy or mommy. But
that might be something.
But if they're giving up the disability, the state can keep it back. They're willing to say, take it. I don't want, I'm not collecting anything. So they're not physically going and take out anything anymore. They just leave it.
Mm-hmm.
That is...
Because I'm thinking, like, the whole point, I guess, that the person asking is because they want the person to follow their responsibilities. But if you charge the person and then
what are you charging them with?
Yeah.
And then they lock them up.
And then they lock them up, they're not going to help
so
the situation
right,
either.
So, and my final, I know you have to go.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have much time with you. So I have to take that break. I have to thank Andisa as a co-host for coming in and really stepping up. Maybe we'll do a part two because I have a question. If somebody dies, a senior citizen and their pension, you didn't inform the state that the person passed on. But you never withdraw the pension after that. So in your mind, the card, got the card, the bank card or whatever, or the pension check, it was never. You just never go back to the corporation and the region and let them know the person deceased, and you just moved on with your life. And 10 years later, they discover the person is no, or 5 years later, they discover the person is no longer with us.
So like nobody informed them that.
But they never. But when they check the bank or they check the, nothing was ever cashed. Could anybody be held accountable? That's the topic that we'll discuss.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.